Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our subject today is autoimmunity, and our expert is Dr. David Brady. He's a naturopath. He's also a chiropractor, and he's a certified clinical nutritionist. He is author of many scientific papers and contributions to textbooks. And also, he is vice provost for the Division of Health Sciences at University of Bridgeport in Connecticut, involved in teaching nutrition and naturopathic medicine up there. By the way, they have a very fine naturopathic medicine graduate program there, and it's also a great place to study nutrition on the East Coast. A lot of these schools are on the West Coast, but I believe, Dr. Brady, this is the first naturopathic school that's on the East Coast. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're currently the only CNME-accredited naturopathic medical program east of Chicago. There's one in Chicago, and then you got to go out to Phoenix, California, or the Pacific Northwest. And like you said, our graduate master's degree in human nutrition is probably the most well-known in the country in integrative nutrition. We have alums all over the world, including at major academic centers. You mentioned Jerry Mullen at Johns Hopkins. He's an alum, and Mark mm-hmm. Houston at Vanderbilt, and many others. So we're proud of what we're doing, and we keep doing great things, I think.
Well, absolutely. It's great because for us folks who are based on the East Coast, it's the go-to place. There's not a lot of stuff going on, as you say, east of the Mississippi on that front. So yep. In addition, and I might add, you were also in private practice up there in Connecticut. So do you see patients with autoimmune diseases in your private practice?
Yeah, quite a few of them, all day long probably. I practice one full day a week in an integrative medicine practice called Whole Body Medicine in Trumbull, Connecticut, and spend the rest of my time here at the university, and also doing work for Designs for Health, the nutraceutical company that I design products and serve as the chief medical officer of for about the last 12 years or so.
And before we get back to our interview, what do you have resources? So, yeah, you have a website at davidbrady.com.
Yes, Dr. David Brady.
drdavidbrady.com.
Yeah, and there's a tab on there of articles, podcasts, all kinds of great resources people can tap into, including a lot of things on the topic we're discussing today, autoimmunity. There's direct full-text access to some of those journal papers we've been discussing, including that one in the Open Journal of Rheumatology and Autoimmune Disease.
Okay, well, so let's come back to the subject of autoimmunity. You know, many conditions can be attributed, at least in part, to autoimmunity. One of the factors that we briefly alluded to in part one, where we discuss molecular mimicry and the hygiene hypothesis, is the so-called leaky gut syndrome. And that's a word that's bandied about quite a lot these days, a lot of people learning about it. But can you define it for us?
Sure. Yeah. Leaky gut, or, you know, more properly, intestinal hyperpermeability, is just, it's an easy concept. We have a lining of our intestines, and the intestines are a big tube that runs right through the middle of us, and it represents an environment that's actually outside the body, even though it runs through the middle of the body. It's full of all these microbes, many times more bacteria and microbes in there than there are cells in our body. So when we think we're carrying all these microbes around, it's probably the other way around. They're carrying us around. And they're living in this hollow tube, and what separates them from us is a layer of tissue that's essentially one cell thick. So this is the mucosal layer or lining of the intestines, and it has a big job to do. It has to keep out all of these bad guys, all these potentially antigenic proteins expressed on all these bacteria and all the fatty acids from these bacteria, the organisms themselves, a lot of proteins in our foods that are not adequately digested, and a lot of toxins that are coming in our foods and toxins that are produced by these microbes. It has to keep all of that out while simultaneously being extremely efficient at bringing in the nutrients we need from our food. So it's sort of the traffic cop between the intestinal environment and our systems proper. And a lot of people have gastrointestinal mucosal linings that are not that healthy. A lot of it's a product of sort of the modern American existence because, for instance, cortisol, stress, all the stress hormones can erode the gut, make it more leaky, makes antigens penetrate easier, make us more susceptible to food sensitivities, autoimmunity, and the like. But the use of anti-inflammatory medications like nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories and aspirin, very erosive to the gut lining. The use of antibiotic medications, even though they're necessary at many times, they do alter the environment of the gut, which can cause, lead eventually to leaky gut. The use of alcohol, the use of processed foods without a lot of fiber, all of these things can combine to really play havoc on the lining of our gut. And if it becomes diseased and inflamed, it can become leaky, meaning it can let more things through than it should. It's not as discriminating. And when that happens, more proteins can come through that the immune system is forced to react to because they're not digested, they're not broken down into a form that's more tolerable for our immune system, and they're looked at as threats or invading organisms or, you know, like you would a virus or bacteria that came through. And it can set off a whole cascade of immunological reactions or manifestations that can ultimately lead to autoimmune disease. And in fact, you know, many prominent researchers, probably the most prevalent researcher that's known in the conventional realm studying hyperpermeability and leaky gut as it relates to autoimmune disease is Alessio Fasano, who's now at Mass General and Harvard, who did most of his work at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. But he's done most of his work as it pertains to leaky gut being a requirement for the genesis of celiac disease, but that's just one autoimmune disease. But really, what he's shown in the literature is really just a better, more formal, granular understanding of what we've been talking about in functional, integrative, and naturopathic medicine for decades. For my 25 years in it, they've been talking about it. You know, Jeffrey Bland has been talking about leaky gut for at least 25 or 30 years, but now it's sort of, it used to be just laughed off and poo-pooed. It's what all those alternative doctors talk about. Mm-hmm. And now you can't pick up an immunology or a rheumatology or an autoimmune journal without papers in there on intestinal permeability and leaky gut syndrome.
So what, as a practical matter, for our listeners who may be suffering from some inexplicable ailment, what could clue them to the possible presence of leaky gut, and can this be substantiated? Can it be tested for?
Well, there's no like overt symptoms of leaky gut that you feel it and go, aha, I have leaky gut syndrome, unfortunately. But people who have disorders related to autoimmunity and immune dysfunction, almost by definition,
it's worth checking for that. Yeah,
absolutely worth checking for. And there are tests for it. There are tests that involve some challenge sugars where you drink, you know, a drink with certain size molecular weight sugars in them. And if they come through too easily and they appear in your urine, we know that your gut's too leaky. But and there are some other antibody tests and some other types of things out there now. But it's pretty much at the point where if you have any autoimmunity going on, there's an assumption you have leaky gut and we treat you for it.
And the treatment might entail what? I mean, is there like a natural gut sealing formula that you've designed for Designs for Health?
Well, there is. At Designs for Health, I designed one many years ago and actually have been improving it all along. But it's called GI Revive. It's in powders or it's available in capsules, but it's easier in powders because you want to get a good dose of a lot of these things. And one teaspoon of this will pretty much deliver the daily dose of what you need to start healing up and tightening up the gut lining. And it has things such as L-glutamine, which many people are aware of. It's the preferred fuel source for the GI mucosal cells. So just like most cells love glucose predominantly, the gut cells love glutamine. So you give them lots of glutamine and they're fed better and they're healthier. But we use a lot of, in this formula as well, a lot of what are called mucilaginous botanicals or herbals that have a long historical tradition of being herbs used to treat gut ailments or stomach problems.
Things like DGL, I would imagine.
Yeah, like deglycerized licorice, aloe vera, slippery elm, marshmallow, or athena, chamomile, okra, cat's claw. These are all mucilaginous. They coat the lining of the intestines. They allow it to heal a little bit, but they act in a different way as well in autoimmunity. These mucins in these herbs There are these complex carbohydrates or sugars that can glob on to and fill up the binding sites to block these protein interactions between, let's say, a bacteria or a virus or some sort of peptide that might stimulate an immune response. They're covering or what we call blocking agents. And
these are GAGs, glycosaminoglycans.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We also put something called N-acetylglucosamine,
right,
which is a very effective blocking agent. There's great studies on N-acetylglucosamine, for instance, in multiple sclerosis patients acting as an independent, an agent that has an independent mechanism of action. It basically blocks antigen antibody formation right at the site where they come together. So less clustering, less binding means less activation of Th1 cells and less autoimmunity. So these are very, very effective formulations. In fact, there is no equivalent drugs. There's no drugs that really treat this. We use something called zinc carnosine as well.
Which is sometimes used for treating ulcers, but in this case it works in the intestine, I guess.
Absolutely. There are drugs in development. In fact, Dr. Fasano is involved in the development of one for leaky gut syndrome that is basically a what's called a zonulin antagonist. There's a peptide called zonulin, which is produced by the mucosal cells, which can temporarily open up channels between them, because there's times when it's advantageous for the body to do that. If there's some sort of bacteria or some kind of organism that it just cannot deal with locally with the mucosal immune response, sometimes the cells will secrete zonulin, kind of temporarily open up the floodgates, allow this organism or antigen to come through because it's prepared underneath with a much more robust immune response. Mm-hmm. But you don't want the zonulin being produced all the time in the channels, the floodgates to constantly be open. And in some people, one of the genetic susceptibilities they have to autoimmunity is they overproduce zonulin.
Oh, okay.
And the floodgates are always open.
Yeah.
So they're working on agents that actually glob onto the zonulin receptor and block it so that zonulin itself can't bind into the receptor and open up the channels.
And that could help patients recover from celiac disease, but also might have greater implications for all patients with leaky gut syndrome.
Absolutely. And I got a prediction for you.
Yeah.
You know, the leaky gut was sort of laughed at for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute that there's actually a drug agent or a pharmaceutical agent to treat it, you will see commercials about leaky gut every 30 seconds.
It's like, do you have ED? Do you have leaky gut?
Low T syndrome.
These maladies as soon as they're drugs.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah. What about a diet? So from the standpoint, someone who is ostensibly normal, let's just do a little thought experiment. How would you induce an autoimmune disease in someone who's pretty healthy? Could you stress them with some sort of wrong type of diet?
Well, it depends on their genetic susceptibility, because as Fasano really elucidates well in his literature, really to have autoimmune disease manifest itself and to maintain itself, you need sort of a triad of factors, all right? And the way Fasano describes this is that autoimmune disease has to sit on a three-legged stool. And if you pull any one of the legs out, the stool can't stand, basically, and the autoimmune disease falls. And what are the three legs holding that stool up? One is you need a genetically susceptible individual, which means someone needs to have a uniqueness about their immune system where if they're exposed to a certain environmental antigen, which is generally a protein, they will react to it much more so than the average person. So the first two legs are you need the genetic susceptibility. The second leg is you need to be exposed to whatever the protein you're susceptible is. It could be a food protein, it could be a bacteria, it could be a virus, what have you. And then the third leg of the stool is actually leaky gut.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have leaky gut. So the question is, which is the easiest leg to pull out? And it's hard to totally avoid the environmental antigen. For a very tightly understood disease like celiac disease, we know, okay, if we can totally 100% avoid gluten, gliadin-containing foods, we can stop the process. But that's hard to do, as we know, right? But there's a lot of these potential triggers when we look at various autoimmune diseases that are hard to totally avoid, and there are many triggers that we just don't understand yet. We have not identified them. So that's sometimes hard to pull that leg out. We cannot change the genes right now. We can test for them. We can do all kinds of predictive autoantibody testing to look at which individuals are susceptible to which autoimmune diseases. But we can't change the gene, so we can't do anything about it. We can identify it. We can't change it. But the easiest leg to pull out or thing to change is to really make their gut environment healthy, tighten up the gut lining and the mucosal junctions, and get rid of the leaky gut. So in our functional medicine approach, if I see an autoimmune patient, it really doesn't matter what autoimmune disease it is. The approach is the same. We're going to go down those three ends of the sides of the triangle, if you will. We're going to test them, find out what autoimmune diseases are they susceptible by looking at their HLA patterns or their predictive autoantibodies. We're going to know from that what diseases they're susceptible. We're going to look for the environmental triggers and their exposure to them of the triggers that we know of. So if they have testing that shows, or a family history that shows, let's say, that they're susceptible to autoimmune thyroid conditions, or every female in their family above 35 has Hashimoto's or is on, you know, thyroxin or something like that, then we're going to look for Yersinia in their gut, doing a molecular stool analysis. We're going to make sure they get off gluten, gliadin-containing foods, because we know gluten, gliadin, antigen antibody complexes have an affinity for the thyroid, and first you get thyroid autoimmune disease, and secondarily down the road you get early dementia and degenerative neurological conditions. So we're going to pull that out of play, and then we're going to do things to tighten up the gut lining. It involves some of the nutrients we just talked about. It may involve looking at vitamin D status, because vitamin D affects the immune system on a multitude of layers.
That can just sort of modulate the immune system.
It does, but it has direct effects on protein junction behavior in the gut lining, actually. It's a direct treatment for leaky gut, which a lot of people don't realize. But there are certain autoimmune diseases where you need to be careful with vitamin D, because they can have upregulated conversion, and it gets a little complicated for this podcast. But
Crohn's, perhaps, you're thinking...
sarcoidosis.
Sarcoidosis, right.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll test with low vitamin D, but giving them vitamin D can exacerbate them, because their 25-hydroxy vitamin D is low because they're over-converting to 125,
right,
because some of their immune cells are just... they're over-converting to the active form, the 125, and you have to slow that process down. So you can kind of feed the fire by giving them vitamin D in certain situations. So vitamin D is not a universally, it's good or it's bad in autoimmunity. You got to kind of look a little bit deeper. But with these predictive autoantibody profiles, we can really determine, like I said, 7, 10, even 15, in some cases 25 years before they would ever clinically present with the symptoms where they would get the diagnosis of the disease. We can find out that they're the person who's going to get it unless we change the, we reshuffle the deck, basically.
What about omega-3 in the diet? Certainly that's a feature of Western diets, a high predominance of omega-6 oils, which are pro-inflammatory, omega-3 oils, often meager. Is that something that could enter into the equation?
Yeah, I think anything that's pro-inflammatory, Dr. Hoffman, isn't good. It fuels the fire and the process. I don't know it's causal in any way, but it's certainly not good. So the omega-6 to 3 dominance in the standard American diet is not a good thing, and getting more omega-3s, whether it's in altering the diet, whether it's in good quality supplementation of a concentrated triglyceride-based fish oil or krill oil or something like that, certainly beneficial. And then just eating real, whole, fresh foods and produce, which have all the phytonutrients and the bioflavonoids and the naturally anti-inflammatory properties. Because one of the best immune modulators, by the way, for people with immune disease is curcumin, is andrographis. I mean, a lot of these botanicals that come from, they're basically from concentrated food sources. But foods with these spices in them are very, very beneficial for patients with autoimmunity, because it can actually block some of these immune antigen-antibody reactions and Th1 activation, and just serve as natural anti-inflammatories in general.
Well, let's explain to listeners how this process actually works. A typical patient comes in to see you with, say, rheumatoid arthritis. You know, they take a variety of supplements or change their diet. Can they expect to feel better in a week or so?
You know, it really depends where they are on the continuum. I mean, I have autoimmune disease patients come in who have been seeing rheumatologists at centers of excellence for, you know, 20 years, and they're pretty far down the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have
joint damage, deformity.
Or if it's a thyroid patient, they have no thyroid tissue left. Mm-hmm. They've been on, you know, HRT for long periods of time. You're not going to undo the damage done. You're not going to make the joints healthy again. You're not going to make the thyroid reappear. You're not going to do that, but you can help them symptomatically. You can dial in things like in thyroid function. A lot of times they're just on a synthetic T4 hormone replacement, and they really still don't feel very well. And if we can get them on a T4-T3 combination,
I'm a big fan of that.
Mitochondrial respiration, they feel a lot better. But the real significance here is that autoimmune diseases don't live by themselves. Autoimmune disease is a ultimate manifestation of an immune system that's off the rails, right? It's out of control. So the real old adage in autoimmune disease is get one, get another. If you got one, you're more susceptible to another one. So it's not just about treating that disease label you have. It's kind of getting rid of the fire in the immune system so that you don't then turn over and attack the next tissue, because today it's your thyroid, tomorrow it's your brain, right? So you don't want to end up with early dementia, for instance. So, you know, we run down all these things, and if someone, you know, if someone comes in very early, they've just been diagnosed with Hashimoto's, or they found out their thyroid antibodies are high, or what we find a lot is a woman comes in and she has a high anti-nuclear antibody, or ANA.
Mm-hmm.
And
the very common.
Says, oh, well, hey, you know, that's very common. We don't know what it is. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
Well, it means something.
No. If you have a high anti-nuclear antibody, that's a red flag. That's a beacon that you need to pay attention. And we start running down all of these triggers. We do much more granular predictive autoantibody testing, find out what they're really susceptible, get these triggers out of their existence, and fix their leaky gut, get them on anti-inflammatory diets, and I am convinced we stop them from getting autoimmune disease 10 years, 15, 20 years down the line.
Well, that's really fantastic to hear. So today's Intelligent Medicine Call to Action, people can find information at your website, which is drdavidbrady.com, correct?
They can also, yes, exactly, drdavidbrady.com. They can also check out cell-fuel.com. That's for particularly for people with fatigue, with pain, global pain, and those fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue.
Oh, that's a whole other subject that we can take up at a future date.
We'll do another call on that, but cell-fuel.com has got some really good resources as well.
Great. And coming up, a book in the works by you on fibromyalgia, correct?
Yeah, my next book for the general public will be on global pain syndromes and fibromyalgia, and we're going to talk about what that whole thing really is and people who really have it, people who have other things that are being mislabeled as it, and how to work through that and figure out what it is that you really have and how to get the right kind of approach or treatment for it.
Well, fabulous. We're looking very much forward to that, and we'll certainly have you back on. Very informative, because this is a huge subject, affects tens of millions of people across the country, and it sounds like you've really systematized the approach to what seems like disparate diseases, but really they have a lot in common in terms of causality.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much, Dr. David Brady, for joining us today. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.